Ramsey TV.
I'm going to give you a life lesson today. I hope you don't mind, but something I tell you today could change your life. And I'm not kidding, because it changed mine. This is a very serious matter. I'm going to tell you why I'm telling you this in a moment. Somebody encouraged me to do this. I told this friend of mine something I'd gone through, you know, when I was a kid and for most of my life, and it blessed this person, and she said, "You need to really go into detail on this." I've mentioned it to you before, but I've never gone into detail on it. I'm going to go into detail on it today, and you're going to see why here on MZTV. My name is Martin Sender. I love speaking with you. Thank you for being here. This is my lifeline. A lot of you tell me that it's your lifeline, but it's also my lifeline. I need to talk to you just as much as you need to hear me talk, because you keep coming back day after day after day. So thank you for that. When I was a kid, I stuttered. I stuttered very badly. It was something I was ashamed of. It was something I never talked about. It was something I never thought I could talk about. It tormented me my entire life. And the fact that I am talking to you today and that I have talked with you for 1,800 to 2,000 videos, whatever, is a miracle. And I'm going to explain to you how much of a miracle it is. And I'm going to give you a principle to explain to you how I am talking to you now. And when you apply this principle to your life in any category of living, not just speaking, it's going to change you. And then I'm going to introduce another video that I'm going to publish directly after I publish this one. It's a surprise video, and I'm going to tell you what it is after I explain to you my lifelong struggle with stuttering. I didn't realize I stuttered until I got to first grade. What a freaking day that was. When I sat in a circle with other kids in first grade, our teacher's name was Sister Mary Judith, and I tried to say her name, and it came out Sister Mary. Yeah, it was that bad. And I mean, I probably stuttered for up until that time, but I never realized it because I was never in an arena where I heard myself be so different than everyone else. And of course, you know how it is in school, kids make fun of you. And it was a hell of a shock. It was not a happy day. And it did not get better. To me, the worst thing in school, this is why I hated school. The worst thing was when you went around to read. When we were learning how to read, we would go around in a circle. They would go down. Sister Mary Jude and other teachers would go down the rows, and everybody would take turn. They would stand up and read. This was a nightmare to me. The only thing I can compare it to, everything's relative, is when I heard John McCain talk about being a prisoner of war in Vietnam. And he was in the most notorious prison in Vietnam. And he said that the Viet Cong would go down the row and just beat people one at a time. They would take them out of their cell and beat them. And then when you were next, you got this panic feeling in your stomach, and you just couldn't push down the fear. This is what I experienced in school. The fear of being the next one to have to talk, to have to read. And I would be paralyzed every time. I wanted to do it so badly because I had so many things inside of me that I wanted to say, but I couldn't say them. And I would get up and I would struggle valiantly, but those hard consonants, I couldn't get out. The P's, the B's, and the S's weren't any bargain for me either. It would be S's. And the J's were terrible. Why the hell did the nun have to be named Sister Mary Jude? Why Jude or Judith? Why Judith? Jude for short. I would say, "Hey, Jude, It was an absolute nightmare for me. I would take later on in high school, I would take failing grades to avoid having to give a presentation. Some reports we had to write in high school required you to give an oral presentation. I would be sick that day, or I would not do it, or I would not turn in my assignment. I would take an F to avoid standing up in front of the class to speak. And my mom felt terrible about it because she had stuttered as a kid and she somehow felt like it was her fault or something. And I remember in high school, she took me to a hypnotist. She'd heard that somehow a hypnotist could put you in a trance, hypnotize you, and get you out of it. So she took me to this guy, I forget what his name was, Dr. Somebody, but it was just like a movie. I went into this guy's office, she sat somewhere else, and this guy took us, he had a like a watch at the end of a string. It was like a movie. The classic hypnotist thing. And he like wagged it back and forth, and he said, Look at the shiny watch going back and forth. You are now going into a deep trance. And when you wake up out of the trance, you will no longer have this affliction. Your speaking will be smooth. Your voice will be velvety. My problem is that I'm not real good for a hypnotic suggestion. I'm too much of a literalist. I can't go under. People can't get me because I'm like constantly paying attention. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean by watch the shiny watch? So I get into the car and my mom looks at me and like, oh my God, he's different. He was in a trance. He was hypnotized. And she said, did he fix it? Is it better? And I said, I don't fucking think so. So no, it didn't work. For some crazy reason, in eighth grade, the thing disappeared. Stuttering disappeared. And I can't explain it. I don't know why it happened. But it did. And it was like liberation. And it wasn't just at school. I used to go to restaurants with my parents. And I would order food that I could pronounce. The one thing I wanted more than anything was pancakes. But I couldn't order them. I'll have eggs. Yeah, I'd order freaking eggs. Or asparagus instead of, you know, French fries. It was that bad. It really was that bad. I became a writer because of it. No, I'm not kidding you. I became a writer because I had so much to say and I couldn't say it orally, and I wanted to because I was just, stuff was in my head. My head was a constant kaleidoscope of thoughts, and I wanted, whenever the teachers asked a question in school, I wanted to raise my hand so bad because I knew all the answers, but I didn't, and I couldn't. I wanted to participate, but I couldn't. So I learned how to write, and I wrote poetry starting in fourth grade because that was my outlet for orderly, fluent thought, and I was fluent when I was writing. That's why I became a writer, because I stuttered my entire life. And it didn't end, like I say, it didn't end when school ended. It went on and on and on. Every public place, on the phone, my God, I used to call girls. I used to pick my girlfriends based on their names. I like this girl named Jane. I couldn't have her for my girlfriend. Is Jane there? No, I had to date people named Alice, the names with A, or Ethel. Yeah, is Ethel there? The weird thing was, is I could say the word two, T-W-O, but not the word two, T-O. It depended on where words appeared in a sentence and how the cadence. See, I write today with a cadence because I learned how to use cadence in order to say things. I couldn't, it's so weird, I could say two, but not two. And so, again, my writing became melodic because I couldn't do it orally, and it frustrated the daylights out of me. It didn't end when I got to high school. And I remember there was a speech therapist that just came to our high school, and she just randomly would evaluate people. And I'm going, are you kidding me? A speech therapist. To me, it was a nightmare. It wasn't an answer. It was a nightmare. So this speech therapist was there, and again, I'm waiting to get beaten by the Viet Cong. It was my turn. I go into this little room with a speech therapist. She was cute. She was very cute. She said, okay, Mr. Zender, I want you to read this. Oh, God. So I read it. It was a disaster. She says, I can help you. I said, oh, well, great. Great. Help me then. Don't hypnotize me. It doesn't work. I can't be manipulated that way. So I went to this woman, very cute. It was a girl, probably. I was in high school. She was probably 24 or something. But I became comfortable with her, and I went every week. And as I became comfortable with her, she would have me read things. And once I became comfortable with her, I became fluent. You see, because stuttering, as with other things in life, is all about performance anxiety. So I became comfortable with this woman, and she would give me passages of books to read, and I would fly through it. I would like, and she was amazed. She goes, oh my God, you read so well. I said, it's in me. I love to do this. I would love to do it, but I can't do it in front of people. The only reason I'm doing it in front of you is because you're cute. No, that would have been a reason why I couldn't have done it, because she was cute. It's that I got familiar with her, see. But it was a temporary thing. It was just like a temporary respite. I couldn't carry it over into the classroom or anywhere else. So, except for that eighth grade year, it never stopped. All right, so fast forward to 1994. I started this work in 19. I'm going to tell you about a miracle right now. It's the only reason I'm talking to you right now. And I can't even believe it myself. Honestly, I'm a walking, talking miracle. You have no idea. Oh, and I started to run because of my frustrations of not being able to speak and express myself. I started to run. Athletics was an outlet for me. So I began this work, as you know, in 1993. And my thing was, I was a writer. That's what I do. I'm a writer. And all I wanted to do was write newsletters. I wasn't even thinking of writing books. I just wanted to write to people, and I wanted to put my personality into the writing. I thought it was illegal at first to put your personality into something and to be funny, because none of the material I ever read of this truth, whether it came from the Concordant Publishing Concern or anywhere else, it was never funny. None of it was entertaining. None of it was like vibrant. It was just like literature. It was educational. And there was no pizzazz. The only guy that had real pizzazz was A. Enoch. Every once in a while, he would do a little winky wink thing, and he would throw in some humor there, but you had to be really astute to find it. But I would see it, and it was like, oh, wow. A. Enoch was accidentally funny there. I enjoyed that. That was awesome. I went to my first Concordant conference in 1993, November. I quit the post office on October 1st, 1993, and I remember my friend Matt Rohrbeck said, we need to go to a conference, and I swear to you, this is the truth. I didn't understand why anybody would want to go to a conference. I was not a joiner. I was not a group guy. I wanted to study independently. I wanted to be locked in my room and write newsletters. That's all I wanted to do. I was a writer. Do you hear me? A writer. And this guy, my friend Matt, said, my sister and I, we looked, and there's a conference up in Michigan. I lived in Ohio at the time. He said, Dean Huff and Jim Corum are going to be there. Dean Huff was the editor of Unsearchable Riches magazine. Jim Corum was the business director, business something of the Concordant Publishing Concern. And these were my people. I mean, I read these guys. I listened to them on tapes when I was working at the post office. I listened to tape after tape after tape. James Corum, Dean Huff. I said, wow, it'd be great to meet these guys, but why? Well, we can go to a conference. They're having a conference. I go, so? Who wants to go? Why? Why would anyone want to go to a conference? That's literally what I said. And Matt and his sister Marion and my wife Marcia, they had to drag me to the conference. Okay, let's go to the conference. It was in Elmont, Michigan. 25, 30 miles north of Detroit. So off we went on November the 3rd, something like that, November the 5th, 1993. So we drive up there, and there I am at the conference. I'm at a conference. And I meet my heroes, really, James Corum, Dean Huff. I couldn't believe how they looked. I pictured them completely different. My faith was shaken a little bit, but I recovered, and I listened to them talk, and I loved it. I was just part of the group listening, and I thought, I remember distinctly thinking this. I said, maybe someday I would be able to do that, but maybe like 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, maybe 10 years from now. I don't see how, but you know, who knows? It'd be kind of fun to talk to people. But in the meantime, I'm a writer, and that's good enough for me. So I left the conference. It was nice. It was nice enough that I said, yeah, let's go to another one. So in June, here we go. Wait for this. In June of 1994, I went to Windham, Ohio, and Ted McDivitt was his name. He was hosting a conference. And once again, James Corum, business manager, that's what he was, of the Concordant Publishing Concern, Dean Huff, also of the Concordant Publishing Concern, editor of Unsearchable Riches magazine, a magazine started by A.E. Nock and Vladimir Galasnov in 1909. They were going to be there. Phil Scranton was going to be there. 25 other people were going to be there. Windham, Ohio. It was a city building, the city hall or something. I don't know what it was, but it's a dinky little town in Ohio off Route 303. So I went up there with my friend Matt. It was just me and him that time. I was staying at my sister. Matt and I were staying at Kelly's house, my sister Kelly in Canton, because Windham was only about 20 minutes, so maybe 30 minutes from Canton. It was an hour and a half from my home, so I said, I'll just stay with my sister. This is going to be great. So the conference, I went to the conference on Friday night. First day was Friday. And I love being in the audience listening to these guys talk. I'm taking notes. I love it. I'm a student, and I love these guys. One of the worst things that ever happened, / one of the best things that ever happened, it was after the second talk or something. It was 7 p.m. I don't know. Ted McDivitt, the organizer, came up to me, and he said, and I had already published 2 issues of my inaugural newsletter called The Idle Babbler Illustrated. And Ted knew about it. He had read it, and people were getting wind of it, and they liked it. And Ted says these fateful words. He says, I have a speaking slot open tomorrow at 2 p.m., and I would like you to take it. I froze in my seat because I had told God that I would do whatever it took to publish the truth. And now, apart from my will, apart from my plan, I was just wanting to attend a conference and be a nice little conference attendee with my little notebook and my little pen. And now, Ted McDivitt comes up to me and says, I have a spot open tomorrow at 2 p.m. I would like you to fill a speaking slot. Without thinking, obviously, without engaging my brain, without using any common sense that God gave me, I said yes. I said yes before I could even think. And then Matt and I drove home to my sister's house, and I said, my God, what have I done? What have I done? Ladies and gentlemen, I did not sleep 1 second that night. I can recall for you every moment of that night. I laid awake, staring at the ceiling, in a panic. I knew what I was going to talk about. I was going to talk about Paul's thorn. I had a different thought about Paul's thorn that most people had. Even A.E. Nock had a different thought about what Paul's thorn was, Paul's thorn in the flesh. And I thought, well, this is the practical side of me. The scholar side of me was planning what to talk about, while the human side of me was going, what the hell are you doing? What the hell are you doing? You can't do this. This is insane. This is the worst thing you know, that could ever happen to you. It's all relative, folks. It's all relative. Oh, I forgot to tell you this. I would pretend to lose my place. When I was called upon to read, I would stand up and I would stumble and I would pretend to lose my place. I would sit down and people would laugh. Classrooms would laugh at me. Classrooms would laugh because of my disability. And it was a real disability. It limited me big time. But you know, tons of people have it worse. So anyway, I'm up all night. Matt and I drive to Wyndham the next day. I'm supposed to go on at 2. There's about 3 or 4 speakers in the morning. I'm dying every minute because I am up next. It's the same fear that comes in with the Viet Cong. Are going to come into your cell, drag you out and beat you. It's my turn to talk. They go down the row. Now it's you. And I was petrified. I can't explain you the panic, the fear. I was shaking. My stomach was upset. My teeth were chattering. My knees, they say your knees knock. My patellas were quivering at 100 beats per minute. They were just 100 beats per second, but they were shaking. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. I had my notes. I knew what I was going to talk about. But not only am I supposed to stand up at this podium and talk publicly for the first time probably since 8th grade, who knows, because I would take failing grades over and over and over again to stop, to not have to present anything to anybody publicly. I felt like it was, again, it's relative. I'm sorry for saying this, but it felt like Gethsemane to me. It felt like I was going to the cross. It felt like I was going to the gallows. In fact, I would rather have been climbing the 13 steps to the gallows. So anyway, there was a break after the speaker before me, and there was like 15 minutes, and this was it. This was my crucifixion. So I'll never forget this. What happened next changed my life. And I tell you this because I think it'll help you. Some of you heard it before, but you never heard this much detail. So I'm desperate, and I go into the bathroom, and I close the door, and I lock the door. It's this little tiny bathroom, and I kneel at the sink. And to me, it's all relative. To me, this is Gethsemane. I said, Lord, if it's possible, please let this cup pass from me. But not my will, but your will be done. And I mean, I was praying. I was on my knees, literally, my hands, my folded in prayer pose on the sink. And then God gave me something that I've never forgotten. And I think of it every time I speak before a group or even before I turn on this microphone. Every time. This is what came to me. It's a thought I never had before. It came out of the blue. But it didn't. It came from the Spirit of God. It said this. It wasn't an audible voice, but it was so real to me. It said, they're not here to hear you. They are here to hear what God would have to say through you. It's not about you. It's about God. You're a vessel. You're the vehicle. It doesn't matter if you fail. It doesn't matter if you look stupid. It doesn't matter if you fumble, if you stumble, if you stutter. It's irrelevant because you are a vessel. You're only a vessel. And it's God they want to hear. And it struck me that the vessel is irrelevant. And I was suddenly free to make a mistake. I was free to look stupid. I was free to misspeak. I was free to be wrong. I was free to look like an idiot. I was free to do anything. And suddenly, this is the lesson. When you allow yourself to be free, to make a fool of yourself, to do all these negative things, then you lose that self-consciousness. And stuttering is all about self-consciousness. It's about performance anxiety. But if you're no longer concerned how you perform, then the bondage is over. Because you're not concerned anymore about you. It's not about you. Everybody says that. It's not about me. But this was so real to me. So I left the bathroom. I'm still shaking, literally shaking. My knees are shaking. My heart is pounding. I'm not getting it like this. I thought you could see it coming out of my chest. This is the famous line. I think I've told you this before. I've told some of you this. There was a guy in the body of Christ named Herb Dirks. And I was ready to take the podium, and he was looking at me. He saw me. He saw I was distraught. I had some semblance of strength because of what God had told me in the bathroom. And Herb Dirks, this guy stuttered himself. He stuttered himself. At the time, he was maybe 60 years old. This was 1994, June. And he was a prisoner of war, this guy. He was a prisoner of war in World War II. He was a prisoner of the Russians. Yeah, the guy was a German. He was a prisoner of the Russians. He was in a POW camp. He got whacked in the head with a rifle butt. A Russian soldier just popped him in the head when he was a kid with a rifle butt, and he stuttered from that day forward. This guy was afflicted. Afflicted. I saw myself in him. He was a terrible stutterer. He was awful. He would come to meetings at my house. And he just talked all the time. He stuttered, didn't bother him. He just went through it. He did it. He did it. He did it. Didn't care. It was noble. It was amazing. And this guy looked at me 2 minutes before I'm supposed to talk. And he... This guy's... He's dead. But I love this guy. And he said this. He says, I tell you three things. I tell you three things. I said, please tell me three things. Tell me four, five, six things. Tell me 10 things. Just tell me something. He goes, get up, speak up, and shut up. Get up, speak up, and shut up. Okay, I got it, Herb. Thank you very much. Don't get shame. So he went off, and there I was. And a miracle happened in that I was fluent. I didn't see that coming. But I was talking about God. I was talking about Paul. I was talking about Christ. I had studied this stuff for 8 years before I said a word publicly. I thank God for that to this day. Before I wrote one book, before I spoke one word, I had studied this stuff for 8 years. And I knew it. That's why I don't have to tell you. Don't pay attention to anything I wrote or said before, you know, 1993. I don't have to say that because God was merciful and gracious to me. So anyway, it was a miracle. Because I'm thinking to myself, who am I to be up here talking to these guys? There's notables here, people I respect and I hold in awe. Dean Huff, James Corum, Phil Scranton was in the audience, and a bunch of other people. Anyway. So there I went, off I went, and it was unbelievable. And people came up to me afterwards and said, wow, that was really thought-provoking. I never thought of that. That was amazing. That was great. And after that, you could not shut me up. You could not shut me up after that. I was amazed. I couldn't believe it. What is this? And so I was in demand then. The next conference in Centerville, Ohio, in fall or whatever, they wanted me to speak there. They wanted me to speak there, because the reason I was in demand is because I came to the realization it was not about me, that I was just a vessel, that God was using me to relay information. It was not, and once I was free of that, then I was the wild man. I was dangerous. I'm still dangerous because I don't care about me. People think I do. People think of Martin Zender is all about Martin Zender. You have no idea how wrong that is. I have a shtick. World's most outspoken Bible scholar, this, that, blah, blah. It's a shtick. It's a joke. I laugh at it because I know who I am and I know what God did with me. So when you hear me coming off with this stuff, it's all, to me, it's a joke. And I'm just playing with people because it's a miracle every single day that I'm here. I can't believe I'm doing this right now. And it never quits. It keeps going. I keep thinking someday it's going to stop. Someday I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm going to turn on this microphone, turn on the camera, and it's not going to happen. It's not like it's a fear. It's just like something that I accept. The day it ends is the day it ends. But until it ends, I'm going to keep turning on this camera and keep turning on this microphone. So the thing is, somebody recorded that talk. Yeah, somebody recorded it. And I have it. And a guy named Rodney Paris of Texas took the tape. And in fact, I have 100 tapes of talks I gave from 1993 through 2001 that you've never heard. Rodney Paris, and I have them all in a couple tape racks in a storage unit in Ohio. And a guy named Rodney Paris said, I want to digitize these. I want to take these tape cassettes and I want to digitize them and I want to publish them. The body of Christ needs to hear this stuff. So this is what he's doing. And he has like 14 or 15 or 16 or 18 or 20 done so far. And what he does is he puts video behind them, just like random, not really random though. He puts like cool video. So while you're listening to me talking, you're watching this cool video or whatever from different things, animals or people or planetary marvels, spectacular solar system, whatever. And so that's going to be coming out one at a time. He's doing this as a labor of love. And so I'm going to be able to publish these. So as soon as this video that you're watching right now is published, I'm going to publish right after it my first talk in Windham, Ohio. Now you know the history of it. Now you know the drama. Now you know. Now you know. And so you are going to hear that talk. And as I listen to it myself, I can hear myself. I listen for my knees to be knocking because they literally knock. I'm listening for my heart to beat. But I can't hear it. And I'm thinking, who is this guy? That's what I think most of the time. Who is this guy? This is why I can watch my own videos and be blessed by them. Because I am like, who is this guy? It's not me. Operating in me is Christ. It's a miracle. It's amazing. That's why I can talk about it in the third person. And it sounds arrogant. It sounds like, oh, this guy's full of himself. He watches his own videos. You have no idea. If you think I'm arrogant, you're lost. I'm not. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Because I know what God did. I know what the miracle is every day. I know what the miracle is. So don't fall for the bombastic Zender. Don't fall for it. It's a joke. It's me making fun of everybody who thinks I think I'm something. It's a joke. I'm just toying with people. I'm playing with them. I'm torturing them. That's right. I'm the greatest guy ever. And they think I'm serious. It's just funny to me. It's ridiculous that anybody could think that. So I toy with that. I torture people with it. Yeah, I'm the best. All right, so as soon as you finish this, I'm linking, go down in the description, go to read more, click the thing, and you'll see a link to a video. That video, there was no video of that day, but there is audio. It's the first talk I ever gave. And it was, yeah, and how many have I given since? You know, crazy. So now that you know the history of it, enjoy it. It's a good message, scriptural message. And I want you to know that you don't have to be self-conscious. You don't have to be thinking it's about you because it's not. It's about God living his life through you. If you are under stress, if you are under pressure, it could be that you're putting that on yourself because you don't realize maybe yet, maybe until today, I hope something I've said has helped you, that you don't realize that it's God operating in us. Philippians 2, 12 and 13. Be carrying your own salvation into effect, for it is God operating in you to will and to work for the sake of his delight.